Hello and welcome back to the My First Marathon podcast. My name is Taylor, and today we have another crossover episode where if you remember my episode with Cody Caswell, this is the runner who originally ran his first 50K with him. This runner is big in the ultra world with 15 ultras under his belt and 3 marathons on top of that. In this episode, we break down his first marathon experience at the San Francisco Marathon, talk about his favorite ultra stories, including the race with Cody, and then finally talk about a recent injury that caused him to basically start over and go couch to marathon in about 30 days. There's lots of great tips whether you're in the marathon or ultra world, so without further ado, please welcome Lane. Lane, thank you so much for coming on the podcast this afternoon. Appreciate you dedicating some time this weekend.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited. This is a little bit different type of podcast than I've done, but I love running and I love ultra running. And so happy to share my story.
Yeah. There's a lot of newer runners that listen to this podcast. There's a lot of people who've been running for years. So you with 15 ultra marathons and a handful of marathons under your belt, you're going to have a lot to share. So appreciate that again. I want to start from the beginning. How did you get involved in this crazy world in the first place?
So I'll tell you, up until 2019, I never 100% considered myself a runner. I loathed running. I went back in high school. I had some knee surgeries. It still had some lingering issue in one of my knees. And anytime I would do any sort of running, my knee would swell and I'd have two days of fluid on my knee and just discomfort and pain. So I was the guy of, I just want to go to the gym and do strength training and some light cardio stuff. And one day, randomly, I'm at work early. It's like 6:30 in the morning in 2019. And one of my good friends gave me a call. We were talking about something at the time. And he's like, hey, I want to run a marathon. I was like, man, you should have somebody to do that with you, like accountability. He said, I'll do it. And then after a couple more conversations, just progressed to like, okay, we're doing this. And then a day or two later, it sunk in that I can't run 5 miles. How am I going to run a marathon?
Sure. And
in that couple of days, we had already signed up for the San Francisco Marathon. This was February. San Francisco Marathon was at the end of July. And I kind of went into panic mode. And I have a couple of friends that have done some 100-mile ultras and triathlons, other endurance races. And one in particular, his name's Justin, started texting. I was like, man, how am I going to do this? He's like, man, just find a training course and follow it and your body will figure it out. And I thought that was the craziest thing I'd ever heard. The first month or two was like swelling in my knee, just discomfort. Pain in my hip flexors, never felt good to go out and run, following this training plan. And then one day, something changed. And I fell in love with the process of learning to run a marathon. And I enjoyed the runs. I enjoyed the training runs. It stopped hurting. I started having no pain and discomfort in my body, in my knee, in my joints. And things have just gone from there. You know, we finished the training and I live in South Louisiana. So if anyone's familiar with South Louisiana, like we are surrounded, people think we live in the swamp, but you know, there's a lot of water here. So it's very, very humid. It's very flat. And June, July is like upper 90s, 95% humidity. And it was just miserable to train. But we got through it. And showed up in San Francisco, and it was just like a breath of fresh air to try to get started on the first marathon.
Yeah, no, that's great. So you kind of got pushed into it by a friend, or you offered some support to a friend and then ended up finding yourself along the way, which I think is what happens for a lot of runners is you kind of start, you have to start somewhere, and then you just kind of find your footing along the way.
Yeah, 100%. Because I had always been a person in the athletics and, you know, always wanting to push as hard as I could in sports and just doing things like that. And there was a time from, you know, getting out of in high school and college and then starting my career at work. And I felt like something was missing. I was like, I want to do something else. I was always, you know, I would always work out and do strength training and go to the gym. But I just felt like something was missing. Like I'm not pushing myself or there's not something not competitive for me. And I had been literally racking my brain for a few months about what should I do or what can I do to get back engaged and make me feel whole again. And this moment when he asked me, like, hey, or mentioned that he was going to do it, I was like, light bulb, that's it. I need to jump into this. And it turns out it was it for me. Like, I love it now.
Yeah, yeah, that's great. It really does hook you like that for sure, running in the beginning. I'm curious, were you like, what sort of research did you do ahead of time? So he told you, all right, we're going to run this thing. Were you immediately like seeking out a training plan, or what did all of that look like when you were putting the pieces together?
Mode. So I was like, how am I going to get through this? I've never run 5 miles. And I started Googling how to train for a marathon, as many things. And it's just overwhelming, the amount of information. And it's like, I'm one of those people that I need 3 options to pick from and I can make a good decision, but give me 100 and I'll stand there like, I don't know what to do. So that's when I started texting and had a call with my friend. And turns out he was actually, he lived in Colorado at the time, but he was flying through my hometown like a week later. And he's like, let's meet up and have dinner. And we went and started talking about it. And he's like, here's a couple options for training plans. And I ended up getting the book. Is it Tom Holland? I can't remember the name of it, but it's a very basic training plan. And I did the intermediate training plan, which the goal is to, you run 4 days a week at the most. And the goal is to finish your first marathon. It's not an overbearing training plan. It's not, you know, at no point do it. Do you feel like you're stretching way too much? Because it really progresses you well. It's not going to train you to go out and run a sub-3 marathon, but the goal was just to finish. And I read that book and it opened up so many insights. You know, I didn't know like all the issues that people have when they run, you know, you're bleeding and shirt rubbing and friction. I had no idea what all this was. Learned all that stuff along the way. That book was great. I wish I could think of the name of it right off my head, but I've recommended it to a bunch of people that have run their first marathon now.
Cool. And I like that goal for the first one, because I think that that's an achievable goal for everybody for their first marathon is completion, not a time goal. When you put a time goal in your first one, it can be too much. It's more research that you have to do, more that you have to figure out. And the marathon distance is hard enough, I think, to wrap your mind around in the beginning.
And as you know, from running more races, right, over the course of several years, every course is different. So I was training in flat southern Louisiana, and I was going to run this in San Francisco, where the weather was much better temperature wise, but there's hills and we don't have that here. And how do I know, even if I tried to give myself some, what I thought a realistic goal, how do I know what that is when I go to San Francisco and the weather's better, but there's these hills that I've never had to deal with before. So you can't really just say you want to run a certain time and put that pressure on yourself. And it was much more freeing to me to accept that, okay, we're just going to finish. It does not matter how long it takes. I'm just going to finish.
Yeah. No, I think that's great. And you mentioned there was a moment for you where it kind of like you stopped feeling a lot of pain and you started to really go, okay, I like this running thing. Do you remember like a specific run where things kind of clicked into place for you, or was it a little bit more gradual?
You know, I don't think I remember a specific run, but right around the same time I was kind of going through another change of where I started trying to eat cleaner. And I had just finished reading one of Jesse Itzler's books, Living with a Seal, which is a great book to listen to on Audible, by the way. It's phenomenal. And that's actually David Goggins that was in the book that it's about. In there, Jesse Itzler talked about, and he's run a bunch of marathons in his life. And he talked about, he started implementing something years and years ago where he would only eat fruit till noon. So, something clicked with me. I was going through the running journey, trying to learn how to run. And so I started eating cleaner because of it. And I started implementing actually that fruit till noon. So when you wake up in the morning, the premise is you eat fruit because it's most easily digestible in your system and you can get the most nutrients from it. Don't put other processed foods in your body. Let your body get natural nutrients. And I started doing that. And I don't know if there's some correlation or just, it was that natural progression from training, but gradually I started to have no discomfort. And literally to this day, what's it been, 5 years now, 6 years I've been running now, I still have zero discomfort in my knee at this point when I run.
Yeah, That's great. I think that's something that's unique about running compared to other sports is you do kind of have to make lifestyle changes at a certain point to keep being able to kind of move forward. Like there's a point where you definitely can hit a wall if you don't put all of the pieces together in your life. So I think that is a nice nudge that running gives you outside of just like the physical perks is that it can change your entire lifestyle for sure. Yeah.
And subconsciously, I think someone might make those changes too, because you just don't want to go out there and flop and fail. And
exactly.
In your very first one, so you're like, what else can I do to get some sort of advantage that's going to help me finish this race? Because you think it's unfathomable that how can somebody run 26 miles and then you do it? And it's like,
right.
You know?
Absolutely. No, I think that's a great point. Yeah. Well, cool. So you were starting to progress through training. I know for a lot of people training for your first marathon every weekend, it's a new distance. So it can be kind of like a dopamine hit that you're getting every single weekend, hitting something new. So what was that experience like for you? Like hitting all of these new milestones?
Oh, I loved it. I loved it. I did learn something along the way that there's some subconscious mechanism in my mind that if I've got a 15 mile run today at mile 12, my legs are going to start hurt. My body's going to start hurting like 2 or 3 miles before. But if I go the next week and run 20 miles, or my body won't start hurting until mile 18, right? So some subconscious mechanism in your mind says, I know what the goal is. I'm going to be good until I get close. And then it's like, oh no, it starts hurting. So, but every week that absolutely dopamine rush, hitting these new milestones, knowing that, okay, I hit what I ran last week. Every step is a new record for me. A new PR, and it just pushes you through. It motivates you. It was very helpful to have a friend doing it at the same time, because we would text each other like, hey, how are you doing for your training? How's, you know, what's going good, what's not going good? So that was beneficial as well.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's great. Yeah, just have somebody so you're not going through it all by yourself. Because like you said, there's a lot of resources that you can and a lot of investigating you can do for your first marathon, and it can be really overwhelming. So I'm sure having somebody to kind of like bounce ideas off of was pretty helpful.
Yeah, he actually had hired a coach and I was watching what his coach is doing for him. And I'm thinking, I'm not doing enough. But I was like, I'm going to stick with this plan that I've decided I'm going to follow. I've read enough books about it. Enough people have said, just follow it. It'll work. So you just got to trust it. You got to pick a plan and just trust it and go and get through the first one. After that, you can start trying whatever you want.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You just have to get the first one out of the way so that you can actually learn how to do the thing from there. But cool. So were there any points in training that you remember for your first marathon where you maybe hit a low point, like you hit the wall for the first time, for example, or an experience like that?
That was probably only we started the training in February. March and April were probably that February, March and April, when you start kind of stretching your runs to like 8 miles, which was just, oh my goodness, that's so far. And that's when I was still having the discomfort. I would really think many times, I don't know how I'm going to do this. I don't know if I'm going to be able to do this. You just don't have the belief in yourself at that point. And that was probably the lowest point. And I think maybe I got a boost of confidence or a boost of encouragement when I started noticing my body adapting better. Like when you first do your first few longer runs that you 10 miles plus, I would come in from running and I would have to go to bed. My body was just drained. It was not used to doing that. I would take a shower and I would go sleep for like 3 hours. And that was never like me, but your body is just adapting. And over time, you know, it gets more used to the quicker recovery. And so you just forget about that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely in the beginning, especially because you don't know a lot about fueling your body and what you're supposed to do after a run for recovery. It's like, you can really hit a wall after those long runs in the beginning for sure. But it sounds like for the most part, things were pretty smooth for your first training for your first marathon. I mean, all things considered, it's a first marathon, so there's going to be ups and downs. But what was your longest run? Do you remember? Did you like a 20 mile run, 21 on that plan?
20 miles. Yep. I did a 20 miler like it was like 2 weeks before. That was the max run. And then you kind of taper a little bit from there based on that training plan. So that one took me forever. I ran it in my neighborhood, and you know, there's a few streets in my neighborhood. I know exactly how far is 1 mile, 2 miles, 3 miles, and I'm doing it. And I was like, this is going to take me forever. I need to start this at like 3 a.m. if I want to finish in time to have you'd be able to go do stuff for the day. You know, it was on a weekend. And just one though, I was happy that I did it. The 20 miler because everything I read said it doesn't matter. Like the next 6 miles, like you'll just have to figure it out. If you can do 20, you can figure out the rest.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's the case for most training plans is 20 is the top that you hit. So that makes sense. And how were you feeling like mentally after that run? And that's like the last big milestone before you kind of step into the unknown of the marathon. So how were you feeling at that point?
I was great. I was like, let's go figure this out. At this point, you know, we're like a week and a half out from the race, and I was trying to get a mental boost of, hey, check out the weather over there in San Francisco. You know, it was like 50s, 60s in July in the morning. I was like, this is going to be phenomenal. Hopefully we have that weather when we get up there. So it was excitement at that point.
Sure. And you were, I mean, traveling from Louisiana to San Francisco, that's quite the logistical thing for your first marathon. So were you flying out like during your taper period or a few days before? When did you actually make it out there?
Yeah. So we actually chose to go against all the reading that you see where it says, stay off your feet the next couple of days before your marathon.
Sure.
Like rest, don't go out and do stuff. My wife and I, and then my friend and his wife, we flew out together, and neither of had been to San Francisco before. So we're like, we're going to go 2 or 3 days early. We're going to go sightsee and go see the place. So we ended up walking a lot, staying out later than we should, trying to explore the place. And part of me was like, I'm not giving up this experience or this time here to miss this. I don't want to just come here and sit in an Airbnb. I really want to go experience the place. And I also had those nervous thoughts in the back of my mind thinking, oh, I kind of feel my legs from all this walking and there's actually hills here. I hope this doesn't affect me during the race in 2 days too much.
Sure. Yeah. So the doubt was starting to creep in a little bit with the walking around and everything.
100%. Yeah.
Cool. Well then race day rolls around. So you had a couple of days of sightseeing. That I think that's good that you got to go out a little bit early, kind of get acclimated, hopefully, to the weather a little bit. And then race day rolls around. I would imagine the San Francisco Marathon's a pretty big race. Was there a lot of people there?
I think there were like 35,000 people signed up between the half. They had two options for the half marathon. You can run the first half or second half, and then the full race. And it was so packed, and we were in a corral way, way in the back. And so it was daunting, the number of people in front of us.
Sure.
We were excited. You know, it's like, are we standing in the right spot? Or do we need to be right here? What's going to happen next? You know, not really knowing the race route and where you're going. But it was super exciting that morning. The weather was phenomenal. Yeah. It was 55 degrees. It was actually a little bit chilly to start, which I didn't know how to prepare for and what to do. But I just decided, like, I'm just going to show up in short sleeves and shorts, which was crazy to me at the time. Now I'll show up and run a race in the 30 degrees in shorts, right? Like most runners. But that was crazy to me at the time. But the excitement standing there in the start line, I remember vividly talking to this nicer lady, probably in her 60s. And she was asking us, hey, have you run a race before? And, you know, both of my friend and I, no, this is our first. And, you know, she gave us some encouragement, which was great. And she said, oh, I've run about 70 plus marathons.
Wow.
Holy smokes. If she can do that many, I can do one, right?
Yeah, right. that's always great. I love those stories at the beginning of the race where somebody who's done it before connects with a runner that hasn't done it before. Cause I think that's so memorable. I had something like that on my first marathon where I was freaking out all by myself and he came up to me and just told me, hey, it's your first race. You're going to PR today. Cause you've never ran a marathon before. And just that little thing, it makes a big difference for sure. Mentally.
Yeah. It was great. And especially, this lady was very unassuming, a small, very short stature, small demeanor. And just to see, you know, you don't think coming from the outside, not having run before, right? You try to picture, you need somebody that's this perfect physical specimen that's going to be able to run these. And this lady was like, no, I just run them. I'm not very fast, but I just do them.
Yeah. No, that's great. I love that. So nerves were there, excitement was there. You were feeling the race energy. And then what happened from there? I mean, we can break down in kind of chunks. So maybe how were the first 10 miles or so for you, and your friend?
Oh, running on a high because, we had been in San Francisco for a couple of days, but still like the iconic sites running on these iconic streets, running in all these places that you've seen before and never got to experience, and just taking it in with every breath. You got the bay with the breeze and the salt air. And then, you know, we literally got to run across the Golden Gate Bridge, and, you know, you make a, what is that, Sausalito Island, I believe. You make a loop on the island and come back across the bridge. And it's like, this feels great. I feel phenomenal. I'm running faster than my pace that I should have been running in my mind, which comes back to bite you in the rear a little bit later. But it was just a high. And on top of it, you know, my friend and I ran for the first few miles together. It was really so many people. It was hard to break out on our own pace. I think I was going to run a little bit faster than him probably. But our wives, they did phenomenal. It was such a huge boost and pick up what they did. They ended up, they watched us at the start, and then they would jump in a Uber and leapfrog us. And so they did that multiple times throughout the race, and would just surprise us at another spot where they would be cheering for us and screaming for us. You know, there's thousands of people on the side, but when you see someone that you know and they call your name, it's just a little bit of a boost. And absolutely. So like every time that would happen, it would just give me a little bit more encouragement, a little bit more excitement. And so that was super beneficial. And I was very appreciative that they did that.
Yeah, that's great. Spectators are huge. And like you said, there could be a million people around you, but as soon as you see somebody that's part of your crew, that means like 10 times more than all the people around you that are cheering. Yeah. So
especially late in the race when you find the pain cave.
Absolutely. Yeah. I've gotten better about, I strategically put my boyfriend and my family where I need them now. I'm like, I know where I'm going to hit the wall, and that's exactly where I need you to stand. So you can kind of play around with it. But so we're feeling pretty good. It sounds like for the first 10 or first half of the race, and it's a pretty big race. So I imagine the aid stations were pretty good. Were you mostly relying on the aid stations for fuel, water, or did you like bring anything with you?
I was relying on them for water. I didn't have anything for water, which was probably a huge mistake for me. I sweat a lot. I sweat easy. And so early on in running, this was one of my biggest concerns, was that I would get dehydrated and cramp easy, get behind on my hydration. And at that time I was trying to do the goos and the chews. And since then I've learned that those are not for me at all. Mm-hmm. And I really suffered. I could have done much better in that race for myself if I'd have known, figure all that out sooner, but it was a learning experience. I won't take it back. I think, you know, I would just use what they had at the aid stations, and I wasn't drinking enough water because they were spread out at good distances that my body can handle now. But at the time I should have carried something else with me, so that I was better prepared for it.
Gotcha. Yeah, I think that's probably the case for a lot of people for their first one is maybe under fueling a little bit, but you made it through. We know that you made it through, so you could just learn from it after that. So second half of the race, how was the next 13 after the half marathon point?
So right at the half, I ended up passing that halfway point right around when the second half marathoners were starting. So it got really crowded again. But it was new people to be on the side of. You end up having a couple conversations with people because we're not moving very fast when it gets really crowded. And second half, I really started to feel it a little bit. And then luckily this was one of the years that BioFreeze was, sponsoring the race. It was the BioFreeze San Francisco Marathon. And that came in, that was really clutch. What got me through this race and saved me. I didn't know what BioFreeze was until like the race, convention or whatever it was the day before. And then getting to about mile 20, I started to like almost bonk. I started cramping. Mm. I knew I was behind on my hydration at that point. My quads and my hamstrings just started cramping up. And what do I see ahead is an aid station. And at this aid station, this was the first one along the race, they had these areas, one on each side of the race path, where you would walk up and there were people that were there with BioFreeze spray cans. And so you would literally just stand in front of them and tell them where you would like them to spray, and they would spray BioFreeze on you. So I
put
my shorts up and I was like, my quads are cramping, and the person sprayed me down, and it was instant relief. I don't know what it does and how it works, but it was instant relief. And so I took off running again, actually moving a little bit right now, shuffling my feet faster. And that got me another mile or so. And then the cramps started coming back in a different spot. I'd see another aid station, and now they didn't have the spray, but they had the gels, but they had huge gallon jugs of the gel. And so I would just squirt as much and rub it on my legs and run to the next aid station and get some more Biofreeze. And I think there were like 3 or 4 aid stations that I had to do this through. It really saved me, because if I'd have had cramps for 6 miles, I probably would have been walking a lot sooner and felt defeated.
Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure. And were you kind of doing any sort of like run walk strategy throughout the whole thing, or had you been pretty much running up until the 20-mile point?
Strategy. I was just running pretty much.
Yeah.
And then I was forced into a run walk those last 4 to 5 miles when I started getting the cramps.
Sure.
I'd get the Biofreeze, spray it or rub it on, and then run as far along as I can. I'd start cramping, have to walk for a bit till I felt like I loosened up and start running. So it wasn't a strategy. It was out of necessity at that point.
Sure. Sure. Yeah, that makes sense. And what, I guess mentally, like, I know you were so far into the race, you probably weren't thinking you were going to DNF or anything like that. But what sort of like was going through your head during mile 20 to 26?
Yeah, I was like, they're going to have to carry me off on a gurney, or I'm finishing this. Like, one of those two is going to happen, because I'm this close. I've got like 4 or 5 miles left. I am going to finish whether I walk. And I started, you know, kind of looking at the times. There's people behind me that are walking this whole course. I can surely walk to finish if I can't run anymore. So at a bare minimum, I knew I was going to walk it to finish it.
Yeah. And was your friend still with you at this point, or had you guys kind of separated by the end of the race?
A few miles into it. We had separated off, and he held back just a little bit. He didn't finish very far behind me. I don't think he went through the cramps that I did. And so he ended up catching up a little bit. And I was in my own head.
Yeah. Are you a music listener on race day, or were you kind of trying to be present with the
not
crowd?
Music. I do audiobooks and podcasts. Cool. And I put some of that on during that race while I was running, but end up, you know, when it starts hurting, I don't want to listen to anything. I just turn it off and just go. So that was my first experience of finding a pain cave, and I don't need these earbuds anymore. I just need to do runner's math and, okay, if I do 100 more yards, then I could walk to that next sign. And if I run to there, I can walk to that next one. Then I only have 6 miles left, you know.
Yeah. We all do it. We all do the runner's math for sure. Mm-hmm. And then the finish line, what was the finish line feeling like for you? Where did you actually get to kind of experience the crowd and the adrenaline and all of that?
Yeah. They, you know, they come, you're coming across, they still have lots of people lining the roadway. You can hear the music as you're getting close, and the announcer, you know, calling out everybody's name and numbers as they're getting close enough for him to see, and they're coming across the line. And, you know, it was there was a kind of a little bit of a curve several hundred yards from the finish line. And that's where you say, okay, I am running it. I am not walking this. And you hear your name, and it's kind of a boost of energy. But it was just, I literally cried when I passed the finish line, because I was, I was in disbelief that I did it. That I was able to do it.
That's such a phenomenal feeling too. And especially because you said in the beginning that you were like looking for something like that, like looking for something to accomplish. So hopefully it felt like all of that was coming to fruition as well for you.
I don't know. So not at that moment. At that moment, I was thinking, I don't want to run for a long time. I can barely move my legs. And I just was happy that it was done. But then my next thing was like, I got to turn around and find where my friend's at. Let's watch him finish too.
Yeah. So had a good distraction, which is great. And then what did you do from there? Did you do anything that night? Like, what was recovery like, I guess?
There was no recovery. We made another poor decision because Golden Gate Park was so beautiful when we ran through it that we told our wives, hey, we need to go. Let's go eat first. And we would eat as much sushi as we could find and buy at the time. Just carb load, just load on any food. And then we went and said, let's go visit Golden Gate Park because it was beautiful. So we could both barely walk, you know, doing the duck walk. Our legs are stiff, nearly cramping. But we were determined to go view the park again with them. So we ended up going to view the park and doing things, but still in bed kind of early because we were just exhausted at that point.
Oh, I'm sure.
And then fly out first thing in the morning.
Brutal.
It was tough to get up the next morning, as anybody knows, after you do that But we're sitting in the airport waiting on our plane, and I'm literally, my whole mind had shifted already. The day before, I was like, I don't want to run again for a while. This was cool. Glad I said I did it. That morning, I'm sitting in the airport, and I'm looking up trail races. And
yeah,
well, I ended up booking or signing up for a trail race that was in my backyard, basically. There's a little state park near here. And I signed up for that. We ran in July, end of July. And then in October, I did a back-to-back 25K, which was 25K one day, 25K the next day, which was my first experience in the trail running.
Wow. And you said that you signed up for that one at the airport when you were leaving?
Oh, yeah, on the way back. And it was something had – it's the same thing I still do to this day. Like, I think I'm done running for a while. You know, you're finishing one of these ultras. And a day or two later, you're looking for the next challenge.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. We have short-term memory loss in the running community, that's for sure, with that kind of thing. So got into ultras. What kind of inspired you to get into ultras? Was it just like, I've already done 26, I want to see how much further I can push myself? Or where did that interest come from?
Yeah, I'm a nature person, love the outdoors. And in thinking about running that marathon, I was like, there were so many people. And over the course of training, yeah, I had listened to a couple books on running, Dean Karnazes and other books, other famous ultra runners like that have written some really good books. And I started hearing more and listening to podcasts and things about ultra running. And that really piqued my interest. And as I looked into it, it turns out, hey, most of these races are just a few hundred runners, and it's a smaller community of runners, and you get to go experience these different national parks and state parks and wilderness areas. That seems something really cool. It's like right up my alley. So when I had the one right here in my backyard that I signed up for, that just sparked a whole new desire in me and lit a new flame. And I didn't look back after that. I was, you know, soon jumped into doing my first 50K, and then it was more 50Ks. I was, you know, that first year after, you know, I did that first 25K, that back-to-back 25K, then probably took about 5 months or 4 more months, and I ran another marathon on the trail. It was a 27-miler. And then I said, you know what, now let's just do a 50K. Why not? And signed up for it. And it's been phenomenal since. I love it.
Yeah. What, just so I make sure I know the timeline, like when from your first marathon did you end up running that 50K? Like, was it within a couple of years or?
Oh, not even a year, less than a year.
Okay. So that's what I was trying to piece together. So this was all really close together.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, so I ran the marathon into July 19. Then I ran the two 25Ks in October, ran another trail marathon in like January. And by later that year, or that spring, I was looking at 50Ks.
Wow. Okay, cool. So that quickly, like that big of a turnaround, what were you changing over time to like improve in the running space, or I guess adjust to trail running too? Cause I know that's a lot different than training for a road race.
Oh, it is. Every muscle gets worked. And
yeah,
I don't know that I've improved much. I'm not a fast runner. I just go out and get it done. I think my body's just adapted more. I've mentally adapted more. And so I just set a goal and go out and do it. It's like, hey, I'm going to run this race. Let me go ahead and train for it. I think over the time, my body has adapted to, teaching me when I need to drink more, keep my hydration. I've adapted better to, I don't like all these synthetic goos and chews, and give me real food. And I say real food, I use that loosely. I eat pretty clean in an everyday diet, but you throw me in a trail race and I'm eating whatever's on the table. And, you know, it just get calories in me. I'll take the sugar at that point. I'm not a big sugar person, but I'll take the sugar, like get me through the race. And I think I've just kind of adapted to, I'll take what's there and I'll make it work.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. Training your stomach, I think, is half the battle with ultra running, with marathon running too. But yeah, you really have to be adaptable. I've heard crazy stories about like, they'll have hot dog eating contests halfway through, and they'll
there's
just have like random tent setups.
They do, they do a tamale eating contest.
Yeah.
So it's an out and back. It's like, it's an out and back. There, you can do the 27 miler or the 52 miler. And you pass the aid station twice where they have the tamales. And if you win the tamale eating contest, you get free entry into the next year.
That's so cool.
The male and female that eat the most. And I remember this last time I ran it, January of this year. I might eat one or two because they're actually really good tamales. But the guy that ran it, I watched him. I finished a little before him. And when he came across the finish line, he was looking a little rough. And he was like, yeah, I regretted that tamale contest. It came up.
Yeah, sure. Hey, yeah, that's all that matters, right? And I didn't mention this before. I should have mentioned this in the beginning, but you know Cody Caswell, who it was one of the first episodes that I filmed on this show. And you said the tamale thing, and I think he told a story about that too. So did you guys run that one together? Was that the one that you guys ran together?
So he's a really good friend of mine. And so we did run that one together. That was his first marathon / ultra marathon.
Sure.
It's a 27 miler. I remember a few years ago, it was like December, and he and I are big on goal setting. And he called me up one morning or one evening and was like, hey, man, I want to run a marathon. And it was my goal to do it before January 1st, before the end of the year. And I was like, dude, you've got like 4 weeks. Sure, we've been running a little bit and you've been running a little bit, but you've never done more than like 10 miles. But he's much younger than I am. He's in his early 20s. And I said, I tell you what, I'm running a trail marathon on January 2nd. He's like, that's close enough to January 1st. I'll do it. I said, well, I'm running a 16 mile training run this weekend. Let's run it together. If you can do that, you can finish the trail marathon. We'll run it together. I'll run it with you. Like, I'll help set a pace. And we did the 16 mile training run. He did pretty good. You know, he felt it, right? He had never run that far. And he's a very positive, upbeat person. And so we went and signed up for the race together and we ran it together. It was great. It was really cold that day because it's early January. So that helps too. But yeah, we ran it together and then I actually helped him. I ran with him for his first 50K we did outside of Yellowstone like a year later.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I'd love to hear about that one because I've heard a couple races in Yellowstone besides just like the amazing views, that they're pretty challenging. So what was that race experience like for you?
So it was midsummer, another midsummer race, but I mean, you're at like 6,000 foot elevation in Wyoming. So it was still hot. It was probably in the low 90s, but there's no humidity. And you don't run in Yellowstone. This race was in the town of West Yellowstone where they have, there's like a, I think it's a cross country ski area. And there's a bunch of trails on is basically where we ran. This was a two loop race. It was beautiful. And there was one aid station halfway through the loop. So it's two 15 or 16 mile loops, one aid station halfway through. And it was great. And he actually had another friend of his that was from Montana, I believe, that came. It was his 50K too. So I was like, okay, look, I've run a few of these. Let's just all run it together. We'll just, you know, enjoy the company, enjoy the scenery. Let's just get through it. And we had kind of a quasi goal of said, hey, we want to finish this in under 8 hours. And it was great, but I knew into the first loop that we were all going to suffer from hydration because there was only one aid station.
Yeah. And, that's brutal.
We got in, we finished the first loop. We're at the turnaround. Our wives are all like helping us get refuel with food, filling our water for us, helping us out. And, I think we're good. And we take off running, and about a mile into running, that's when my friend Cody just collapses with cramps in his legs. It looked like there were aliens in his calves and his quads. You could just see his muscles contracting in different shapes and angles. And we probably stood there for 15 or 20 minutes. I thought we were going to turn around and walk him back. I did not think there was any way that we would finish from there together as a group. But he said, no, I want to do this. And I said, that's fine. We can walk the entire route. We're going to do it. And we ended up basically walking most of it. We would do some shuffles for, a couple hundred yards here and there until he would start cramping again. But once you get that far behind on hydration, unless you're in a really long race, it's hard to catch back up.
Right. Yeah.
And so the goal was like, we're just finishing. And I think we actually beat our 8 hours I'll have to go back and look, but I think we beat our 8-hour time limit by a few minutes. Just barely made it through. But that was huge. Wow. That was great.
That's fantastic.
Some of those that I've run with people that I've never run before are some of my favorite races, because I like seeing that helping them get across the finish line. It's rewarding.
It's like paying it forward. It's something that somebody probably, you know, you had your friend in the beginning that pushed you into marathoning and that led you down this whole path. So it probably feels a little full circle to be able to then kind of pass that on to other people.
Yeah. And I think I want more people. I want as many people as possible to get that feeling and have that feeling, because for me, it triggered something in my mind that says, if I can do this hard thing and do it often, like, you know, I'm doing it fairly often, everything else that I look at as hard stuff in life isn't that hard. Like, I can go do this other stuff too. So it just kind of made a shift in the way I think in my business and how I do things that it has relayed into the rest of my life, or bled over into the rest of my life as well, not just running.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I love that. That's a great way to look at it, is that it's opened up so many other doors and in so many other aspects of your life. I think that's very, very cool.
Right.
Well, cool. Well, I know you've got several other races under your belt, so maybe I'll ask a little generically, like, what has been the most impactful ultra marathon that you've ran? Like, it could be
my longest.
The views were spectacular. Okay. Yeah, longest. Yeah.
52 miler. That one sticks out the most for a couple reasons.
Yeah.
In Oklahoma, it was the Flower Moon. I picked this one specifically because I wanted my wife and my kids to be there and be able to experience it. My kids had not ever been to a race that I did. And so I picked one that had multiple loops so that I could see my kids multiple times. And this one worked out perfect because there's like one central aid station that you do almost like a clover pattern and hit the aid station 4 times before you make a full loop. And so I was able to see them a whole bunch of times, and every single time, you know, you're daddy, daddy, and they want to help you, and they're getting me watermelon, or they're refilling my water for me. And so that one it was very memorable, very impactful, not just because it was my longest race that I've done, which stretched me and pushed me the most, but also because of who got to be there, and they got to be there and see me run too. So that was phenomenal. I would highly recommend that for somebody who has kids that they want their kids to come experience it, to pick that sort of race as often as you can so that they can be there, because it gives them excitement when they see you running too.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And that's something that, you know, I haven't thought about myself, is that with road running, you likely, like you said, that your wives said, they can kind of leapfrog you throughout the race, but with trail running, you're out in the middle of nowhere. They can't really get to you.
Right.
Yeah. That's cool. Have your kids showed any, I know they're pretty young, but have they showed any interest in getting out there and going for a jog with you?
No, I mean, they'll come ride bikes on occasion if we run. Yeah. My wife runs a little bit. They'll come ride bikes, but not super often. They'll come in we have a home gym set up. They'll come and work out with us. So like, it's starting to get, we're ingraining health and fitness into them just by them watching us do it.
Absolutely.
So, you know, hopefully it takes off for them as they grow up. I would love to run a race with them at some point.
Yeah, that would be really cool.
Jump out on the trails with me. That would be so cool.
For sure. Yeah. I think it's great that you're setting just a good example for them. Like you said, it's more of a representation thing of them seeing you do hard things that I think is gonna hopefully pay off for them in the long run, for sure.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. They watch everything we do. We know that, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, cool. I'm curious more about that race, like, that's a long time to be running. And I know that this is a marathon podcast, but there's a lot of ultra runners that listen too. So what is your fuel strategy on a run like that? I know you eat a lot of whole foods, but like, how are you normally strategizing that?
So for that one, it was a late May race. I tried to pick something in the spring, but I couldn't get something early enough to give me enough training time when I decided, hey, I'm going to do this. So it was a late May race. It was in Northern Oklahoma. It ended up being 94 degrees on race day, but lower humidity. So I had to set myself a goal. Every half mile, you're drinking huge gulps. I had a hydration pack, you know, running with a camel pack. Every half mile, I'm drinking lots of water. So I would literally keep an eye on my watch. Every half mile, drink. I noticed I was getting behind, so I increased it to every quarter mile, drink. that was huge. That was my biggest concern about this race, was getting behind on hydration and cramping and not being able to catch up. But the aid station was really, really well packed. It was just lots of fruit. In the morning, they were cooking bacon and eggs, and you know, some of these aid stations go all out. They were phenomenal. Yeah. I was eating all that stuff in the morning, and then midway through the race to the latter half, it was just really hot. The sun was just beaming down, and I didn't want to. I could tell my stomach. I was like, I'm not going to hold down those types of foods. So, you know, I actually passed through the aid station a couple times and didn't get any food. And that was a very poor decision. It always is when that type of race. And bless this race, this volunteer's heart, this guy who he just worked that aid station the whole day. And you come into it so many times. He said, hey, I've noticed you came in here a couple times and you haven't eaten. You need to eat something. And I was like, dang, that's a good point. Thank you. And so I ended up trying some watermelon, and watermelon was my savior for the rest of that race. It's the only thing my palate, my stomach, my mind said I would eat, but it's getting that hydration back in me, getting some nutrients back in me. And it was well needed at the time, apparently.
Yeah. Yeah. That good on him for pushing it. Cause I know you're just so tired at that point. I'm sure that you can't even make those decisions for yourself. You're just going all based on feel.
And never having done that distance. Like I remember running next to a couple, a husband and wife that were running their first one. And we were finishing our first 26 miles, and they go, one marathon down, one to go. And I was like, oh, geez, I have a whole nother marathon to run. And so I kind of got in my head a little bit. And this is a very hilly, rocky course. But good on those aid station workers. Like, they are so phenomenal at most of these races. They pay attention most of the time. They're runners too, so they understand what you're going through. And I've had other races too where, you know, people notice things with you. They're like, no, you probably need to get some electrolytes in you, or, you know. So it's always great when they're so attentive and push on to you like that, because you're not always thinking about it. You're in your head, you're in the pain cave trying to figure out, how am I going to make it back to this aid station again? I don't think I can make it up this next hill. And so it was phenomenal that that guy was on top of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Have you ever had any experiences? I know ultras can be, sometimes they're like a little bit more remote and maybe the aid stations aren't as good. Have you had any of the opposite experiences where like the aid stations were fewer and far between, maybe less than?
Yeah, I've run a few races like that. But I'm much better. My body's more equipped to just deal with it now. I will study the aid station distances ahead of time too, and kind of make sure what they have to eat. And they usually, I've really never done one that didn't have anything. You can figure it out. You can make it through.
Yeah.
Especially now, having run multiple races, you can put together a plan and figure it out.
Yeah.
The key is that they have enough water for you to refill, because I have to refill my hydration pack more than most people, I feel like. Or else I'll go and start cramping really soon.
That's good. Water is the necessity for sure on these long races.
So too, I am not a soft drink person, not at all. I hate them. I tell my kids and my wife that's poison. Don't bring it in my house. But in a race, I will get halfway through. You give me 20, 25 miles in, give me some Coke. I will down it like water. It's phenomenal.
Right.
You get sugar in your bloodstream when you need it. I remember my first 50K that I ran, we get to the end and I'm sitting down. I finished just ahead of one of my good friends who we run together a lot, because he was having some cramps, and he's coming across the finish line. And we're sitting there a few minutes later kind of talking about the race, and I got really lightheaded, really dizzy. And I was like, I looked over at him and I said, Joe, I don't feel good. I think I might need to throw up. So I walked over near a trash can. Just so happens at that time, the race director was walking by him and was like, hey, are you okay? Just checking on him. He's like, I'm good, but I don't think my friend's very good. Looking a little pale. And the race director walked over to me and looked at me. He goes, I'll be right back. He walked to the aid station by the finish line. He got some M&Ms and some Sprite and brought it to me and said, eat this and drink this. And he could just tell he hadn't been around it enough. I was bonking. I had no sugar in my body, in my blood. Like, yeah, there was nothing. I ate those M&Ms and drank that Sprite. And it was like pixie dust had been sprinkled over me, magical fairy dust. And I felt so much better. You know, I wasn't going to get up and go run another 50K, but it just, the nausea went away and I felt great. And that's when he explained to me how, like, you know, the soft drink gets the sugar back in your body really quick and just helps your body cope through it. Not the best way to do it, but in a pinch, it worked great.
Sure. So, yeah.
100%.
So funny how our bodies react so differently to things when we run. It's something that it still blows my mind, especially in the summer months now. Summer, I think, affects us more than we would love, the humidity and everything. But it is crazy, all those little tips and tricks that you can kind of grab along the way that really make a big difference.
Yeah, just like, I like pickles, but pickle juice, I can't sit and drink that on a normal day. In a race, you get me halfway through and I'm fine, sweaty. It tastes phenomenal. You touch it, you lift me, like, this is the best thing I've ever drank in my life.
Right. Right. Yeah. It really brings you back to life for sure.
It does.
Well, cool. And then I know before we started filming here, you talked about a little bit more recently, you've kind of like gone through an injury and you're in a different phase of life with running. So maybe if you want to talk a little bit about where things have kind of progressed a little bit more recently with you.
Yeah. So, a year ago, right in December, I was kind of running pretty good, and I had that same 27 miler I talked about, the tamales, had that race coming up in a few weeks, and both of my heels started hurting. I had noticed it a couple months before that after I do some longer training runs, my heels would hurt a little bit. And it progressively or gradually got worse and worse. And we went to do that 27 miler, and about 5 miles in, it felt like daggers being driven into both of my heels. It was miserable, painful, but I finished a race. I don't know how I finished a race, but I finished it. And for the next week, I could not walk. It was just excruciating pain. I ended up going to see the doctor, and he's like, yeah, you got plantar fasciitis. Like, what cures this? What fixes this? And he says, not much. Rest. There's some exercises you can do, but everybody's different. Everybody's body responds different. I started talking to friends. Some are like, I couldn't run for a year. I couldn't run for 6 months. And I'm thinking, this is the end for me. This is miserable. And so luckily at that time, I had just turned 40 in December, and my wife bought me a rower, and I turned into a rowing machine. I would row every day, every morning, twice a day, 10,000, 15,000 meters, just as fast as I could. I got really good at rowing fast. And I went probably over 5 months without even running, without attempting to run. And then I said, okay, I want to start easing back into it. So I did slowly, and I basically went almost an entire year without running because of it, without running a race, actually. I started running again second half of the year, just didn't want to push it too much because I was scared I would relapse into the same injury. I didn't know what it brought it on or why it happened, but I knew I didn't want to experience it again because it sucked.
Right.
So we come to early this year, and I've been thinking, I want to put some races back on the schedule. I'm ready again. And my daughter was deep into some travel softball at the time. So our weekends were just packed. I wasn't going to miss a tournament for her. Like, I'm going to be there. And it was in beginning of March this year, my wife signed up, or she signed up early in the year to run a half marathon about an hour from our house in the beginning of March. And we're like 30 days out, and I'm trying to find races to fit on the schedule. I can't find it. And I said, you know what? My wife's running this half. They also have a full marathon, and I run it once before. Why don't I just sign up? So I effectively did a couch to marathon in 30 days. I had been running, but nothing more than about 5 milers. And so over the next 3 weeks, early this year, I said, okay, I'm going to run 1 hour the first weekend, run some shorter runs during the week. But I was really going to focus on, I need the long runs. That's my goal. So I did a 1 hour run, a 2 hour run, a 3 hour run, and then a 4 hour run on the last weekend, or with a 1 week gap for kind of taper and recovery, because those runs were way harder than I remembered them being, because I had not done that distance in so long. Like, my body was not used to it again. I did adapt much better and much faster again this time around, as opposed to starting from scratch when I first started running, right? Because my body kind of knew it. I already knew it mentally. Right. I knew mentally I could finish this. I knew it was going to hurt. I knew this was just going to hurt more than usual, but I knew I could get through the hurt and work through it, and that quitting is not an option, because when I line up on a race, like, I'm not going to be the fastest. I'm not going to compete to win, but I am not there to quit. I will finish this race no matter what. So I ended up doing it. It was hot. It was a harder race than I remember, but I finished it, and I was, you know, that was like, all right, we're back in it.
Yeah. Yeah. You needed something on the calendar. You couldn't go too long without a race, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So how did your body feel like throughout the race? Cause that's a quick turnaround. I know you probably had a little bit more of like a physical base that you were working with, but like how did you feel throughout that race going from couch to, you know, a marathon that quickly?
First half was great. Really, it really started to suck fast the second half, just because sure. my body wasn't used to it. And I was pushing my pace a little bit. I still ran a really slow race just because it got miserable. I started getting some cramps toward the end, had to do a little bit of walk run cycle the last 3 miles or so. And actually same thing on this, you come to the finish line and you see the finish line up ahead and they announce your name that you're coming in. And I was like, yes, okay, I'm going to run it out these last 400 or 500 yards. And I cramped up, my right hamstring cramped up bad. But at that point, I was thinking, all these people are watching. You are not walking. So right. I just ran through it. I don't know how I did it, but I just ran through it until I finished. But it was a great, great feeling to feel like I'm back in it now. So
yeah, absolutely. I got one coming up. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Cool. That's what I was going to ask, is what do you have coming up next?
So my friend that I've run several races with, he lives in Texas now, over in Houston. And we are going to run the Habanero 100 at the end of August. We're running the 50K. We're not running the 100K cool. or the 100 miler. But it's August 24th or 25th. It's South Texas, Southwest Texas. It's going to be 100 degrees.
Hot.
And the race starts at noon. So
wow, okay. Brutal.
It's going to be its own challenge. But he's been out of some races for a little bit. I've been out of some races for a little bit. So let's jump back in. And we know that we're going to push each other. But it'll be fun. We'll figure it out. I like running in new places and just figuring it out.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing how that go. Texas in August is no joke. So
you'll
have to really hydrate.
yeah, big time.
Well, cool. Well, I'm curious, since you've got all these races under your belt, what advice would you give to someone who's maybe thinking about running their first marathon, or maybe they're signed up and they're kind of in the beginning stages? What's some advice that you could offer them?
Do it. Something I've learned along the way, going to all these ultra races, I could bring the average person who's never been around a race to one of the races that I sign up for. And it could be especially one of the places or one of the races that might have a 20 miler or 40 miler, an 80 miler, and even 100 miler. And they've got all these different distances that people are signed up for. If I bring that person there and say, I want you to go around and pick what race everyone's doing, you're going to get it wrong. We have this perception in our head. You know, there's going to be 65, 70 year old people who look like they've been eating donuts all their life, getting up off the sofa, that are doing the 100 miler. There's going to be people that, you know, you think, oh my gosh, this person is just always in the gym. They got to be so well trained. They're doing their first 20 miler.
Right.
Everybody's at a different point of running in their life at different times. And to me today, a 50K for me might hurt just as bad as more or that person running their first 10K, right? So get out there and do it. You're going to progress. You're going to grow. Maybe you don't turn into a person that wants to run marathons often or ultra marathons often, but go be part of that percentage of people that has done it, because go do hard things. Go do hard things in your life, and it'll make other parts of your life seem even easier. I know it might sound cliche, but it is so true. There's just mental shift that will go on, the sense of accomplishment, the sense of, you know, camaraderie, the stories, the people I meet on the trail, and you'll spend 2 or 3 or 4 hours running next to a person talking about life. Some random person, you have the most in-depth conversation about life. It's the experiences. So just sign up for something. Go out and push yourself and do it. You don't have to go be the fastest. Who cares? Just go set your goal. Go accomplish it. And you're gonna fall. Most people, I think, will fall in love with it. Enjoy the journey. Don't focus on the destination. Like, I have to finish in this many hours. Just enjoy the journey getting there and enjoy the journey of the race.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, all of that I think is great. Whether you're a beginner runner or whether you're 2, 3, 4 plus marathons in, I think that everybody can kind of take a page from that of just your goals are your own goals. And as long as you're shooting for something, then I think all the pieces kind of fall together. I think that's great.
To this day, like every race I run, I still stop to take pictures of the scenery and things that I see. I'm not so worried about finishing under a certain time that I don't want to overlook the experience. I want the experience more than anything.
Yeah. No, that's great. I like that. Well, cool. Well, my last couple of questions with you are just some questions that I like to ask at the end of these things. We get a lot of questions from listeners about like fuel and about shoes. I always give the disclaimer that you should be doing a lot of trial and error if you're training for your first marathon. And this is all your own journey, figure it out for yourself. But for you personally, what have been kind of your favorite fuel options over the years?
Fuel options is just natural food, real food. When I run in my neighborhood and I do long runs, I've got bananas set out for me at the end of my driveway, fruit, things like that, that I can just grab when I'm passing by and get some fuel back in me. Some people love the goos and all these other things that are kind of specially manufactured for you, but I just like the natural food. I feel like that's what's in our world. That's what was put here for us to live off of. I want it in its natural state. And I find like that just gives me the most energy, the cleanest energy.
Yeah. Yeah. That's perfect. I like that. And then for shoes, what have you liked for shoes? I know trail shoes are a little bit different, but what have been some of your favorites?
I actually have never owned a pair of trail shoes. I have only had
interesting.
Because I train 99% of my runs are on road, on pavement. We do have a local state park that I don't go to enough, that I should go to much more, but I have always, so the issue I mentioned in the very beginning, I used to have a knee issue. I had torn meniscus in high school, had to have surgery. It's because my feet flatten out. My arches flatten out. And so it twists my knee, puts pressure on my knee. So when I first started running, I went to the running store and was like, this is what happens that I've learned when I walk or run. How do I prevent it? And the guy at the running store was like, you need a support shoe. What the heck is that? So basically, it's just got a stiffer foam under your arch that keeps your arch from collapsing. And I started off with like a New Balance 870s or something. Not a very comfortable, cushiony running shoe by any means, but it started working for me. And I've probably owned 15 pairs at this point. I don't change shoes. I just get the newest model of the exact same shoe. They have more cushion, more foam on them now. They call it like fresh foam or something. But it's the same support shoe, the same model. I just keep ordering the exact same shoe in different colors now.
Why change it? Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Because that's what I know a lot of people will buy into, like the shoe rotations and switching it up. And I know that there's a lot of benefits to it, but I know you can also, if you have a specific like injury or something repetitive, like you were saying, if it's not broken, don't change it.
Yeah, it's probably hurt me a little bit on some of these trail runs I've done in areas that are very rocky and have really rocky, because I'll finish a race and the bottoms of my feet feel like pin cushions because you've just run on sharp, jagged rocks for so long. Whereas you can get trail shoes that actually have they're plastic protection underneath, and they actually have better grip naturally for running the trail. But, I will probably look into that in the future, but it's going to have to be some trial and error because I need to find another shoe that I feel comfortable in.
For sure. Hopefully New Balance will come out with something similar. Yeah, you can just make a natural progression over there. Well, cool. Well, thank you so much for walking through your experiences. I feel like we barely scratched the surface of all of the ultra marathons that you did, but I appreciate you walking through the ones that we did. That was great to go through.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on and let me share my journey a little bit. I hope that every one of your podcast guests can give a little nugget to somebody that sparks that fire for them. So hopefully I could do that for someone.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Well, cool. Well, we'll stay in touch for sure. And thanks again. We'll talk soon.
Absolutely. I enjoyed it.
Thank you so much for tuning into another episode. If you're enjoying My First Marathon, it would mean the world to me if you could rate and review the show. And if you or someone you know has ran a marathon and would like to share your story, I have a guest form to fill out in my bio on Instagram. That username is @myfirstmarathonpod. See you on the next one.